And now, a break from the news to spend some time this Christmas Eve with the late jazz icon and New Orleans native Louis Armstrong.
Magnolia trees at night, sparkle and bright. Fields of cotton love, wintry white. When it's Christmas time in New Orleans. Dreaming of a white Christmas, just like the ones I used to know.
Armstrong's holiday songs are popular this time of year, but he also made some rarely heard home recordings.
This is Louis Satchmo Armstrong, talking to all the kids from all over the world. 'Twas the night before Christmas, when all through the house, not a creature was stirring, not even a mouse.
That's Louis Armstrong reading 'Twas the Night Before Christmas back in 1971, just months before he would die at age 69. It's part of a treasure trove of recordings discovered by the Louis Armstrong House, a museum in the Corona section of Queens that used to be the home of Louis and his wife Lucille. Ricky Riccardi is the archivist there and joins us from NPR in New York. Welcome.
Thank you.
And joining us in the studio is Matt Glazer, the artistic director for the American Roots Music Program at the Berklee College of Music here in Boston. Matt, thanks to you for joining us, too.
Thank you.
And I first have a clarifying question for both of you, because I have always said Louis Armstrong, but is it actually Louis?
There's really no wrong answer, but he seemed to prefer Louis. His draft registration card when he was 17 years old, the clerk spelled his first name L-E-W-I-S. So he gave it as Louis. And when he does Hello, Dolly, the producer of the record wanted him to sing Hello, Dolly, this is Louis Dolly. And he responded, it's Louis. And when he listened to that record, when you listen to it, he holds that S. This is Louis.
All right. Dolly, we will go with Louis then. So, Ricky, many people probably have Christmas albums featuring Armstrong. Tell us what they'll find if they visit the house in Queens.
Sure. Well, Christmas was very important to Louis, and he always seemed to have a tape recorder going around the holidays. Making reel-to-reel tapes was kind of his obsession in the last 20 years of his life. So we have audio clips of Louis celebrating Christmas and talking about Christmas. And we also have some clips of some of the songs that he immortalized.
That recording of 'Twas the Night Before Christmas we just heard, is it true that that was some kind of advertising thing he was doing?
Well, it was recorded for a record company, but Lorillard Tobacco, they printed up a million copies, and if you bought a carton of cigarettes, you received a free copy. So it automatically became a gold record.
Wow, a sign of a very different era.
Yeah.
Ricky, when he was around the house, did he record himself practicing and playing unaccompanied trumpet and working on things?
There are some of those moments. His main way of practicing was to play along with the radio. And we have one tape where about six straight minutes go by, and anything that pops on the radio, whether it's Guy Lombardo, Auld Lang Syne, Blue Bells of Scotland, he just plays along.
Immediately.
Right?
He replicates it immediately.
Immediately. He improvises. He plays little cadenzas, always in the right key. There's no written documentation that he had a perfect pitch, but when you hear that stuff, it's very
amazing.
Convincing evidence, because it comes right in every time. Mm.
We have a recording of Louis listening to Christmas music as he sort of riffs along with it. Let's listen to that.
Merry Christmas, everybody. This is Satchmo.
I'm dreaming.
But it's Himmel is singing.
That's Al Hibbler, who sang with Duke Ellington for a number of years. He was very popular on his own. That tape comes from Christmas morning, 1950. And it's one of Louis's first tapes. And Louis grabs the microphone and says, Merry Christmas, everybody, like he was broadcasting. But there's only one person in the room. So it's like, why is he doing this? Well, you know, maybe later that day there would be a house full of people and they would play the tape back and it would be humorous. But really, Louis was always on in some way.
I love this kind of forensic musicology, I call it. I mean, documentation is coming out for musicians who we didn't know there were these recordings of, and to get a glimpse into their daily lives. I tell my students that they can't really imagine a world in which, I mean, they live in a world where they turn on their iPhone and press record and they can videotape anything that's happening and audiotape anything that's happening. But that was not the case in earlier days. And then to find that there are actually are recordings of these people, for me, it's the most kind of, it has a tinge of voyeurism, but I feel like it allows you then to get a deeper appreciation of these people who are your heroes.
There's another recording considered quite special of Louis Armstrong listening to Nat King Cole singing All I Want for Christmas.
All I want for Christmas is my two front teeth. My two front teeth. My two front teeth.
Singing that.
If I could only have my two front teeth, then I could wish you Merry Christmas.
You know what's amazing is Louis Armstrong invented the way that Nat King Cole is singing. I mean, if it hadn't been for Louis Armstrong, this way of swinging on a melody would not have existed. And by that point, it had become the modus operandi for every singer in America. And here's Louis generously digging one of his many, many protégés, even if they were not directly related.
And Matt, tell me if I'm wrong about this, but I believe that Louis Armstrong and Nat King Cole never recorded together. So in some sense, is that a way to hear them together?
The only chance we get. Yeah, they were friends, but no, Louis and Nat never got together. So those 30 seconds are it.
Mm.
And Ricky, another song you have playing at the museum is called Cool Yule. Matt, you're snapping along to this.
So
why
good.
Is this one particularly
oh,
great
man,
for you?
Oh, man, she's just out of the gate swinging like a monster. I'm going to destroy NPR's furniture accidentally.
As you pound along.
Not to get too existential on you, but there is this kind of life energy in swinging. If I was running for president, I would run on a platform of every American has to learn to sing Louis Armstrong solos. That would be like a litmus test if you wanted to gain citizenship to the United States. Can you sing Louis Armstrong solos from Big Butter and Egg Man and Potato Head Blues? And I actually believe that it's valuable spiritually and existentially for everyone to immerse themselves in this music. It has, I am not kidding, I really believe this, that it has a value to human life that is tremendously deep and is makes you incredibly happy on a cellular level.
And what is the value, just the sense of life and energy?
Thank you for pitching it over the middle of the plate for me there, because it's about the human experience of time. There's something magical about swinging, because music is essentially the art about time, and time is one important factor in human experience, and the greatest swinging musicians understood the mystery of the human experience of time in some way that they embody. And so by participating in that, by singing along with it, by feeling it, by listening to it, your cells are being realigned in some way. That's my crackpot theory, and I'm standing by it.
Ricky. Consider me a convert.
We now have two people in this little cult.
We're listening back to some rarely heard recordings of Armstrong. One of those clips gives us a sense of why Christmas was so important to him. It's from an appearance he made with his wife, Lucille, on the old Michael Douglas talk show.
Somebody said Lucille, wherever she is in the world, wants to celebrate Christmas, she just goes ahead and does it. And
she always have a little Christmas tree, a miniature or something, you know.
And Ricky, tell us more about why those Christmas trees meant so much to Armstrong.
This was something that goes way back. Because you have to remember, Louis was born in pretty much the deepest poverty you can humanly imagine. Mm-hmm. And there weren't many Christmas trees going on in his neighborhood, in the battlefield section of New Orleans. So he meets Lucille. They get married in October 1942. They still hadn't purchased the home in Corona yet. So their honeymoon was about six straight months of one-nighters, a different city every night. And when it came to Christmas time, they're in a hotel room, and Louis is at the job. Lucille says, you know what? I'm going to put up a Christmas tree in the hotel room. Let's get a little festive atmosphere here. Mm. And Louis comes back from the gig. And he almost had tears in his eyes, Lucille said. And then he finally said, you know, this is the first Christmas tree I've ever had.
Mm.
And for days after, up to Christmas, even after Christmas, they brought the Christmas tree with them everywhere they go until it pretty much fell apart.
And Matt Glaser, question for you. Was the reason he really had never had a Christmas purely poverty? Was that what it was about?
Well, never very far below the surface was his early life. People tell the story that at the end of his life, he had an engagement at the Waldorf Astoria, and he got a bad review in the paper, and he said to his manager, do you think we'll ever work again?
Well, I'll tell you one of my favorite stories. In August of 1967, Lewis did 2 weeks in Framingham, Massachusetts, and his good buddy Jack Bradley was there, and Jack tells a story that they're in Lewis's motel room, and this is not a suite. It's a little, you know, rundown motel on the side of the road. And Lewis tells Jack, you know, Jack, I've really made it. And Jack says, what do you mean? And Lewis says, anytime I'm hungry, I could walk over to the refrigerator, get an egg, and make myself something to eat.
Mm.
I've really made it.
Mm.
And Jack said he had tears in his eyes. And
wow.
He told him, you know, you should have filet mignon 3 times a day. And Lewis just brushed him off. That was the height of his success. By this point, he had Hello, Dolly, 35 movies, TV every week. But the fact that he can make an egg sandwich anytime he wanted, that was it. He had really made it.
We also have a cut from Zatu Santa Claus, Z-A-T-U Santa
right.
Claus. And he used it to learn the song. Here's that.
Oh, there's Santa, you gave me a scare. Now stop your teasing, because I know you're there. We don't believe in no goblins today, but I can't explain why I'm shaking this way. I bet I can see old Santa in the keyhole.
So that was taken off of an acetate disc. We don't know who the singer is. It might be the composer of the song, but it was given to Lewis as a way for him to learn the song that he was going to record on October 22nd, 1953.
We also have what the final product sounded like.
I said, who's there? Who is it? You stopping for a visit? Is that you? Santa Claus! Oh, there, Santa, you gave me a scare. Now stop teasing, cause I know you're there. We don't believe in no goblins today. But I can't explain why I'm shaking that way.
He's deep, deep inside each quarter note. It's so deeply swinging. And the timbre of his voice is very complex. It's easy to caricature it, but in reality, there's a lot of stuff in it. If you were to analyze it with some spectrometer, there's all these fricatives and plosives and different sounds that speech pathologists would talk about. So it makes it a very rich musical experience.
The song that Armstrong is probably most known for is Oh, What a Wonderful World. And he talks about that here.
There's a zillion people dug that tune the way I did it when I felt it. Because it's so much in Wonderful World that brings me back to my neighborhood where I live in Corona. And Lucille and I, ever since we married, we've been right there in that block. And it's just like one big family. I saw 3 generations come up in that block. And they're all with their children, grandchildren. They come back to see Uncle Satchmo and Aunt Lucille. So that's why I can say, I hear babies cry. I watch them grow. They'll learn much more
than I never knew. And I think to myself, what a wonderful world.
Tell us more about the inspiration for that song and how he went on to become so popular.
Sure. Well, he co-composed with George Weiss the song What a Wonderful World. And the president of ABC Records, a man by the name of Larry Newton, he was horrified. He said, what are you doing getting Louis Armstrong to sing a beautiful ballad with strings and a choir and all this stuff? We need, you know, hot jazz and banjos. And was so sure it was going to bomb, he put absolutely no promotion into it. And the record did bomb in America. But nobody was thinking of outside the United States. And it became a number one hit in England and South Africa and all over the world. Mm. And finally, in 1986, it was used in Good Morning Vietnam, the Robin Williams
That's
movie.
Right.
And then it finally hit the charts in America. And it's become Lewis's best known song since then. But as you heard in the clip before, when he showed up to the recording studio that day, he wasn't thinking of Vietnam. He wasn't thinking of civil rights or violence or anything. He was thinking of his neighborhood in Corona, Queens.
He was thinking of home.
Yes, indeed.
Ricky Riccardi is the archivist for the Louis Armstrong House in Queens. Ricky, thank you.
My pleasure.
Matt Glazer is the artistic director for the American Roots Music Program at the Berklee College of Music in Boston. Matt, thanks to you, too.
Thank you.
Sleigh bells ring. Are you listening? In the land, snow is glistening. A beautiful sight. We are happy tonight, walking in the winter wonderland.
The news is next, here and now.
Is the bluebird here to stay? Is a new bird? He sings a love song as we go along, walking in winter wonderland. In the meadow we can build a snowman, then pretend that he is Parson Brown. He'll say, are you married? We'll say, no man, but you can do the job when you're in town. Later on we'll conspire as we dream by the fire to face unafraid the plans that we made, walking in the winter wonderland. As we dream by the fire to face unafraid new plans that we made, walking while we walking in a winter wonderland. Wonderland.